Recently, the Small Business Administration had a meeting where they're going to put together basically their recommendations that they're going to give to the SEC about a change or changes that could potentially be happening with the definition of an accredited investor. So I, the true dork that I am, watched all 8 hours of the Small Business Administration meeting to see, what was potentially going to be their suggestions and to see kind of how it would all play out. So just to kind of give everybody some background into this, what they were potentially proposing to do was to first and foremost make some changes to the definition of what it means to be accredited. The first thing that they were thinking about doing was adjusting it for inflation. Now, this would have been a nightmare, in my opinion, across the board for multiple small business owners, companies like ourselves, anyone that really, has to go out and raise funds as part of their business model and partner with accredited investors to do so, because it would have radically changed the definition. So, right now, in order to be considered accredited, you either have to have $1 million net worth, not counting the value of your primary residence, or if you're an individual, you have to make at least $200,000 a year, with the expectation that you'll continue to do so. Or if you're a married couple, you have to make 300,000. Now, if they had adjusted this for inflation, listen to what it would have done to these thresholds.
Let's get ready to scale.
Hey guys, welcome to yet another episode of Ready to Scale. Today we bring you our trio, which is, of course, myself, Jeanette Friedrich, the Director of Investor Relations at Blue Lake, our fierce and bold and wonderful CEO, Ellie Pearlman, and then, of course, our super whiz, which is Ryan Razaleski. So I'm glad to have you guys on the show today because I have to tell you that I did something insanely nerdy, but I think you'll be proud of me. So, recently, the Small Business Administration had a meeting where they're going to put together basically their recommendations that they're going to give to the SEC about a change or changes that could potentially be happening with the definition of an accredited investor. So I, the true dork that I am, watched all 8 hours of the Small Business Administration meeting to see, what was potentially going to be their suggestions and to see kind of how it would all play out. So just to kind of give everybody some background into this, what they were potentially proposing to do was to first and foremost make some changes to the definition of what it means to be accredited. The first thing that they were thinking about doing was adjusting it for inflation. Now, this would have been a nightmare, in my opinion, across the board for multiple small business owners, companies like ourselves, anyone that really, has to go out and raise funds as part of their business model and partner with accredited investors to do so, because it would have radically changed the definition. So, right now, in order to be considered accredited, you either have to have $1 million net worth, not counting the value of your primary residence, or if you're an individual, you have to make at least $200,000 a year, with the expectation that you'll continue to do so. Or if you're a married couple, you have to make 300,000. Now, if they had adjusted this for inflation, listen to what it would have done to these thresholds. So instead of $1 million net worth making you accredited, you would have needed $3 million. Instead of an individual person making 200,000 a year, they would need to make $607,000 a year. And instead of a couple bringing in 300,000 a year together, they would need to make $911,000 a year to be accredited if they had adjusted for inflation. So I'm very happy to report that I think there was probably about 15 people in this Small Business Administration Council. Only one person on the entire council thought that that was a good idea. So definitely don't have to worry about that anymore, which I am very relieved to hear, because it would have drastically eliminated a lot of people from that accreditation status, which not only would have a negative impact on our business and other small businesses, but it's really an injustice to individuals that are trying to grow and create wealth for themselves. It would really eliminate them from a lot of opportunities. So I'm happy to say that that idea definitely didn't make it anywhere off the ground. Now, very interestingly enough, they have not yet actually come out with their formal recommendations. But because I literally watched all 8 hours of this meeting, I know what they're going to come out with, or I'm pretty sure. So, what I can say with great confidence is that they are not going to be adjusting for inflation. They've also decided that they are going to be more inclusive. And so, they're actually going to finally give people a way to basically qualify to be accredited, even if they're not, quote, a millionaire. So, now, in lieu of net worth, if you still want to be able to participate in investments that are generally only for accredited investors, they're actually going to have a test put together that people can take the test. And if they pass the test, then they can be considered accredited with the caveat that they can only potentially invest up to 5% of their net worth in any rolling 12-month period. So I don't think it's very cool that there's kind of a limitation or a restriction on telling somebody what they can or cannot do with their money, but I do think that it's really good that they're willing to take this educational component and bring it to the forefront, because there's a lot of people, that have a lot of, ambitious goals and are very financially competent and easily should be considered accredited just based off of their knowledge. And if they do, decide that they want to get into investments, I think people should have the right to do that. So that's pretty much my take and my little summary for you guys on the very, very long SEC Small Business Administration meeting.
Very interesting. When I'm thinking about the SEC, I'm thinking about the body that is supposed to protect investors. And so if you're actually updating the accreditation status, you're removing a lot of the opportunities that are open to, current accredited and smaller, investors. And that you're so if they would have updated the amount and adjusted to inflation, it would have been an injustice for all these investors that don't necessarily or cannot even invest directly with Blackstone and BlackRock and the like. So I think it's really interesting. I also think that it's interesting that they're actually going to recommend, maybe not just they're not ready to recommend yet, but they're making one step further and forward on the test component of accreditation, because I've been hearing this for years and years that the SEC is going to create some sort of a test. And it's if I were to guess, we're talking about over a year from now until this is going to be implemented, because now there's going to be a whole, new discussion of what should be in the test, how should you take it, what is the minimum score, on all the, I mean, it's part of the government. It takes, a lot of time to implement things. And so I definitely think it's a step in the right direction. I don't think the test is going to be available, in the next 90 days or so. It's going to take time. But it definitely, I think this is a good step towards actually benefiting and protecting investors by allowing them, to allow open the door to all those opportunities, investing, with companies, private equity firms like BlueLake. And which, many times are investments that are yielding on average higher rate than the big, guys around the block. And so if this definition would have updated, then it would have shrunk the industry and only give room to the really large, companies. So we are, working with investors that ex have more than 3 million in net worth and with family offices. But we also work with, couples and investors that are accredited, even though they don't have 3 million, in net worth. So I think it's definitely, obviously it's a good outcome. And I hope that they're going to keep making, smart decisions that are going to actually benefit investors. Ryan, what do you think about this whole thing?
You know what I think, Ellie, is Jeanette can no longer call me a nerd. She finally kind of d deserved her right to be a relentless dork at this point, I think is the by verbatim what she mentioned. So Jeanette, I don't want to hear another word about me going off and watching these tangents. You've officially overridden me. From my chair, and obviously you guys both work directly with investors, and you're a lot more intimate with the SEC's regulations, but I think it's important. And the reason being is I'll kind of give you an example of why you mentioned that the SEC is a governing body that is essentially supposed to protect investors' interests. Which I'll take the contrary is I actually like the 5% threshold for a couple reasons. But and the reason I say that is back in a previous lifetime, I was in wealth management over with Merrill Lynch, and I took the Series 7 exam, and I studied for, I think it was 4.5, 5 weeks straight for 40 hours a week, passed the exam. But I wouldn't expect people to give me $5, $6, $7 million to manage their equity portfolio just because I was necessarily what I'd want to say is educated enough is probably the way they're looking at this. So I like the idea that there's a 5% kind of maximum in the 12% rolling basis once you pass that test and become accredited, because it gives you that level of exposure. So not only are you supporting the small businesses or the investment firm that you're investing with to give them access to capital, but it's also a learning curve, and it allows you to kind of see inside of how these firms are operating, how they're reporting, how they're delivering this yield. And it gives you a new fresh perspective of how they're navigating complex situations in various stages of the business cycle or the economic cycle. So I like the 5% threshold, because then eventually, whether it's those investments that you made over that 12-month rolling period are accumulated and guarantee or kind of give you segue into that accreditation status is great. Or if it's your own personal balance sheet and maybe it's your salary at your full-time job allows you to get into that threshold, and now you can start allocating 10%, 15%, 20%. I think it's a great way to start kind of segueing into an accreditation status and becoming a more sophisticated investor. Because like I said in my example, is just because I took a five-week training program and passed the securities license doesn't mean I'm an expert, and I should feel comfortable investing millions of my own capital and having no kind of understanding or potential replications of doing so. So that's kind of my take from more of a backseat who doesn't have as much exposure into this kind of side of the SEC.
You know, it was interesting because one of the debates that kicked off was whether or not the accredited investor should also have to take the test. And
Oh.
so, yeah, you know, one of the Small Business Administration committee members, you know, said, you know, just because someone has, you know, a high net worth doesn't mean that they're necessarily a sophisticated investor. And, you know, it was interesting. It kicked off a good bit of debate. I saw a lot of eyebrows raise up across that table in that room. I'm sure, I'm assuming probably a significant portion of those committee members are probably accredited investors themselves. So that did not go very far either. So I thought it was interesting. They did not move forward with that. But you know, to your point, Ryan, you know, that is a good point. You know, you do need to have the experience just because you've read about it. It's like graduating from college. That's great. You read it all on books. But until you're doing the job in real life, you know, it can be very different. And so I do think that maybe that is prudent, you know, to have that five minimum, that 5% limitation or cap put on there. You know, the other thing that I thought was really interesting was that their decision was driven by a very different motivator than what I expected. So, you know, Ellie, you talked about how the whole point of the SEC is that they're supposed to be protecting investors. But the biggest driver that I was able to deduce from the committee was based on a report that they shared, and it was all about the impact that this would have on small businesses. And so essentially, the reason why everybody was very strongly against adjusting it for inflation was because it would have potentially a just almost a paramount negative effect on small businesses that need to be able to raise capital and have investors. So I think, Ryan, I ended up sharing that report with you. And I just thought it was really insightful because it really shows what an impact investors have on our overall economy. So, Ryan, I'm just curious, did you take a look at that report? What did you find to be, kind of the most significant, findings from it?
I did, yeah. And I actually kind of related back to some of my volunteer experience with a nonprofit agency called Pacific Community Ventures, who supports impact investing in underserved communities across the country. And what I found so interesting is one of the greatest challenges for entrepreneurs in business today, and even decades before this, is accessing capital is through every stage of their business cycle, whether it's getting new products off the ground, whether it's kind of launching and making technology investments, or even early seed investments, or if you're kind of in the mature business stage and you need growth capital to access, whether it's penetrating a new market, growing market share in an existing product type, it is a critical component. And then part of that article, one of the most compelling data points that I read where small businesses are truly critical to the US economy. I mean, you hear about the FANG stocks in some of the largest corporations in the country, but what I found interesting was over 60% of total net jobs that were created over the last 2 decades, since I think the number was 95 or 96, somewhere along those lines. Those net job openings were all derived from small businesses, and almost half of the United States gross domestic product, so GDP, is created by these small businesses. And even from a population's perspective, the amount of people that it impact is tremendous. I mean, nearly 20% of adults either own a business today or have done so in the last 3 years. And 80% of those small businesses quoted concerns or the ability or the lack of ability to access growth capital is ultimately what shut them down. So the SEC, if they were to come out with some of these new statuses, it'll make it overwhelmingly more difficult for some of these small businesses to access capital and thrive. And ensuring these businesses have access to that capital is critical. And it's going to come from accredited, non-accredited investors. And a lot of the early stage companies, I mean, 50% of them is the figure that I was quoted, didn't need more than $50,000. So that's a great opportunity. So when we talk about that 5% cap, that's a great opportunity to fill the void for instead of no pension fund or institutional investor is going to look at some of these opportunities and say, I'll give you $50,000 because they're moving millions of dollars at a time in terms of the checks that they're writing. So this will give an opportunity to support that critical pillar of the economy. And they said 3 times the amount of small businesses that failed in 2022 was attributed to lack of funding and resources and investors that could fulfill their need. You just need capital, especially in the early stages of your business. So that's what the most compelling out of the article that you sent me. It's just the sheer impact and GDP contribution of these small businesses.
Ready to Scale is brought to you by Blue Lake Capital, where we hunt down the best multifamily investment opportunities that we can find and invite investors to join in with us. We target Class B value-add multifamily properties across the Sun Belt. Our CEO, Ellie Perlman, invests a substantial amount of capital into every deal. This means our interests are aligned with yours. If you're an accredited investor looking to expand your portfolio and diversify sponsors, be sure to visit us at bluelake-capital.com. Blue Lake Capital, be bold, be extraordinary, and keep moving forward. This has got to, ring very true to your heart. I'm sure you understand these challenges. I'm dying to know what you think.
Yeah. So a couple of things that go through my mind. First and foremost, I think there's something to say about the government's role in protecting people, generally speaking. So if you think about it, there are some things like, wearing seatbelts, where the government, wants to protect you. So you kind of, they force you to wear that, even if even if you don't want to protect yourself, and if you don't want to, you're going to get a fine. So that's on one side of the spectrum.
Not in New
And then you have,
Hampshire. Live free or die in New Hampshire.
oh, really? I didn't know that.
That's what it says
Oh,
on your
wow.
license plate. Live free or die. Apparently, you don't have to buckle up in the state of New Hampshire. Not telling
Oh.
anybody to unbuckle if you're driving through by the mountains, but
Interesting. It's like I believe in Germany there are roads where there's no speed limit, and the Germans basically tied back to some research that came out that actually attributed the speed. There was a correlation or none of it, no correlation between speed and death toll from car accidents. So they said, hey, it's not because it's not be people die on the road not because because they were speeding, but because it could be alcohol or you're driving out of the influence. But yeah, I mean, back to my point, it's that's one part of the of the spectrum, or that's one side of the spectrum. The other one is free market, and I'm a true believer in free market. I remember learning about the US and the economy and the concept of the self-made man when I was in college, so over 20 years ago. It's something that I wanted to be part of. The idea that if you work hard, you put in effort, and you can actually succeed in the US. And having a healthy intervention, kind of mix between businesses and a free market and the government, I think is what created the US as the best country, in the world, the strongest country in the world, with the most, with the strongest economy in the world. So, I also think that the fact that we are going to, we're approaching elections that has something to do with all these things, and I'm still waiting for interest rates to drop, but that's a whole another discussion. But yeah, sometimes the government will intervene, and sometimes the government's going to let the market do what it should be doing. And I think right now, when you have a lot of sponsors in real estate, a lot of companies that are in trouble, the market will sort of correct itself, meaning investors will know which companies to invest in. A lot of the investors that have not been that experienced because they've started investing only when the market was going up are now learning what some of our more experienced investors already know, which is, real estate is a cycle. So now the market is actually acting as a protector. If you wish, for investors to learn how to invest, what to ask, who to invest with, and the fact that someone is making $220,000 a year or $190,000, really, that delta is not what's gonna really, protect. I mean, why 200,000? Why not more? Why not less? So, I think, as a business owner, I definitely want to see the market forces kind of shape the economy. I think most entrepreneurs prefer to have minimal intervention, from the government. And obviously I'm one of those people. But I also think that the government is the same one that actually, well, not the same one, it kind of switches every several years, but the government is whatever they're doing is working, because the US is still strong. And of course, you can say a lot of things about the US economy and where we were 20 years ago or 30 years ago compared to now. But I definitely think that the US is going to continue acting as a very strong force in the, in the international economy, because the government many, many times intervened only when necessary. And as long as this balance is not going to be distorted, then we're going to continue being, strong. So, I think that in I think they would have also, if they passed an opposite recommendation or resolution, I think they would have gotten a lot of backlash from small business owners, from businesses in general and from investors who are going to say, wait a minute, it's been working great for me. I'm sophisticated enough to know I know what to do with my money, but now I have only 2 million in net worth, not three. So all these opportunities are not open to me. And just to be fair, there are opportunities that are open to non-accredited investors. So there are two type there are many types of capital raises out there. The most common are 506C and 506B. The 506C, these are the investments that we are raising money for, which are essentially open to accredited investors only. 506B are investments that are open to accredited and non-accredited investors, but only 35 unaccredited investors can invest in that type of investment. Type of raise. And the difference between 506C and 506B is that with a 506B, you cannot post anything. You cannot market the deal. You can only reach out to the investors that you know and have pre-existing relationships. And it was designed to protect investors from seeing a random post on Facebook and invest money and then, potentially lose it. So it's not that there's not going to be any opportunities for accredited invest for non-accredited investors, but the more experienced companies, those with more resources, are usually, and there are exceptions, are usually going with a 506C, not 506B.
It's interesting too that you bring that up because that was actually one of the concerns of a handful of people on the council was they were astonished and scared about how many people were now getting their investment advice from social media, from TikTok, was specifically brought up. I think that that was part of what also drove the recommendation for the test is the realization that people are going to become aware of things rather they can't control that. You know what I mean? They just can't. And even if it is a 506B offering, the reality is that sometimes you might see a sponsor on there talking about their company, saying a whole lot of other things. They aren't pitching a deal, so they're not breaking a rule, but they're still definitely getting in front of, people that they don't actually have a relationship with because social media has changed the game. I mean, it just has. And so I think it's
Juliet, are you saying you didn't go on Reddit and buy GameStop after the hedge fund started to go against?
I wish
Yeah,
I had. But it's
good.
actually interesting that you bring that up, Ryan, because what I was thinking about and what I just frankly don't understand is why these stipulations are put into place for alternative investments like investing in a company or investing in real estate like we do, but why not the stock market? I mean, people have lost their shirts for decades and decades and decades. So where's the protection in that? It doesn't actually make any sense to me. So it's allowed in publicly traded companies, but not privately. But okay, now it is. I mean,
Maybe because the stock market is liquid and you can potentially sell your position rather quickly at the right price. But when it comes to, VC, angel investing, real estate investments, these are not, liquid investments. The money is locked for 3, 5, 7 years. And so maybe that's what increases the risk a lot more. But you're right. I mean, I was actually thinking about it. Hey, why not do the same for the stock market? But then you're going to take the stock market out of, a big portion of the population's out of their hands. And that's not fair because then you're presenting opportunities only to the wealthy. That can get wealthier. So yeah, it's a very good point. But I'm glad that that was the recommendation. And yeah, there's a lot of danger in going to social media and getting information, from there. I mean, hopefully, people are smarter than this. I think collecting data is one thing. Making decisions based on that is a different thing. I mean, we published a book, recently on Amazon, and we definitely put content out there, but we are not investment advisors, and everyone should gather information from multiple sources and make their own informed decision by the end of the day, not solely just because we wrote a post or I recorded, this episode, and now investors are saying, okay, now I know what to do, and act on it. So, and people are smarter than that. They know.
Yeah, you would hope so. I think most of them do. But I don't know. I found the whole thing to be interesting, but that's a good observation about the fact of, being illiquid versus liquid and the time period. So, they are not, I guess, apples to oranges in that regard. So, good point.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think just to sum it up, I definitely appreciate you listening for this discussion for 8 hours. For me, would have been a 20-minute discussion of why it should or should not pass. And we'll see. We haven't seen the official recommendations, so I'm actually curious to see if it's going to be in line with the discussion or they're going to take a different route. It doesn't seem likely, but anything is possible. So.
Yeah, we'll see how it all shakes out. But it's worth it to me because it was very important, one, to me, for our investors, because I know that our investors enjoy and actually, truly cherish, frankly, the opportunity to be accredited, to be able to invest, to be able to work towards their goals and their dreams and their financial security for their families. And everybody has different reasons for what they're doing, but they're very personal to our investors. So, I watch because one, I was worried about our investors more than anything. In addition to that, I was worried about, our company and our business model. Granted, there's plenty of big check writers out there, so it really would not have had as much of an impact per se on Blue Lake as it would an individual investor that just got suddenly demoted to not accredited. But, I just felt like it was really important to do that. So hopefully, by the time this airs, the official recommendations have been published, but if not, then this is really hot news because unless anybody else actually watched this for 8 hours, they're not going to have these takeaways. So we
Not
will see
many.
what happens with
Not
that.
many. It's funny, we're all three nerds. I'm in denial that I am one. My husband keeps telling me, you went to MIT, of course you're a nerd. And I say, I'm not a nerd. But we are. We love data, and it is what it is. I mean, I guess we need to own it. So
Well, I can't hide from this one, that's for sure. So, thank you guys for letting me geek out with you about me watching an SEC meeting for 8 hours with the Small Business Administration, which I truly did find very interesting. And I think it's very promising information and news. And I really look forward to seeing, hopefully, some of those that are considered non-accredited having the right, to be able to participate in some of these investments, even if they, only make, $290,000 a year instead of $300,000 a year or whatever it may be. So we'll see how it plays out. But anyway, in the meantime, for those of you that invested your time listening to me geek out today, thank you very much. We appreciate it. Please don't forget to subscribe, like, rate, and review the show. Leave us some comments. We're always checking them and we really appreciate them. And we will see you guys on the next episode.
this podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.